Are you part of the DBF community that wants to eat their skin?
Oh, God, no. Christ. Fuck no. Oh, shit, dog. And if I remember correctly, it's not that they want to eat their skin.
They
want to
wear their skin.
They want to flay them and then wear their skin around like some sort of shit off of...
like Buffalo Bill.
Like Buffalo Bill, yeah. It puts a lotion on its
like
skin or else it gets...
Daddy Bill. Yes. Buff Daddy Bill.
Daddy Bill?
Daddy Bill. Yes. Yeah, you can hear my dog in the background.
Hey, it's a good doggo.
This is our second episode of the day.
It's the holiday doggo for the holiday episode.
The holiday, dee, dee, dee. The holiday episode.
Welcome to our non-denominational holiday Festivus Hanukkah Christmas.
Right. We can't legally call it Candle Nights because that is TM'd, but
TM. It's almost as good as Candle Nights in the sense that it's nothing like Candle Nights and not as good.
And it's not as good, and it's not going to be a whole month, and we don't do weekly podcasts anyway, so this is all you're going to get from us.
Enjoy, you jackals.
Dig Dug, from AP, man yells, there's no Santa at Florida holiday event.
This is me. I feel this on a spiritual level, because...
I am both of these people in this story.
The child crying and the man yelling, there's no Santa.
Great. It wasn't the Grinch who stole Christmas. It was a man who screamed, there's no Santa Claus, over and over during a recent holiday festival in Florida. A Southwest Florida woman shared cell phone footage from the Fort Myers television station, NBC2, of the man yelling during the Cape Coral Festival of Lights on Saturday night. Cape Coral police told the station that the officers were at the event but couldn't do anything because the man was exercising his freedom of speech. They added that they could have intervened had he used a voice enhancer, such as a megaphone, or started a riot. Cindy Menks of the Cape Coral says it's about decency, and she said that at this magic time of this year, was taken away from some of the children.
Oh, so, the magic of telling kids a fucking lie.
Right.
Yeah, Santa's not real.
I'm both of these people at some point. Like, I yes, Christmas is a wonderful time, which I cherish to be with my family and loved ones and friends and stuff like that. Also, there's no Santa, though.
So, yeah, I mean, step one is you believe Santa Claus is real.
Some days where I'm like, bah humbug, no Santa.
Step two from believing Santa is real is thinking that George H.W. Bush was a good person.
Boom.
If you believe one lie, you'll believe a lot of them.
Got him.
But yeah, I super empathize with the guy who's yelling at kids that Santa isn't real, mostly because I have had some really rough interactions with kids. Like,
right.
I mentioned on the last episode, which we recorded about 10 minutes ago, that I did some, my dad and I did some holiday shopping up at IKEA. And it was my first time up at IKEA, and part of the trip was going to the cafeteria type area.
It was,
it was very, very strongly recommended by a friend of the show and listener, Jessica.
I've actually never been there.
To IKEA. Oh, dude,
Is it good? Is it bad? Like,
it was very crowded. I already don't like people.
It reminds me of the 30 Rock episode. It's, you know, never take your boyfriend or spouse or girlfriend to a IKEA because you're just going to end up angry at each other.
Oh yeah, I feel like that's very accurate. Because so, it was annoying enough getting around because like people have no situational awareness and will like round blind corners and like bump into you and they'll smack you with their carts and they're just jerks. And then, like it came to a head in the cafeteria where I was told.
Stabbed a guy.
What? Yep, almost. Almost as
now
good.
Now you're in witness protection.
My name... Hi.
You're in an undisclosed location.
Hi. My name is Johnny Podcaster. I've forsaken my old name because right. I need to be protected. But,
His name is redacted.
It all came to
he
a head.
Individual.
It came to a head in the cafeteria where it was a super long line. And there were kids everywhere. And not only were there kids everywhere, but there were parents who seemingly did not give a shit about their kids because they're letting them do all sorts of dumb shit that I would have, like, I would have been taken out of the store if I was doing the shit these kids were doing. And there was this one kid in particular who's right in front of us who kept, like, almost knocking over our special cart because they have special carts that you put trays on. And so
they have a cart. They have a cart tray thing.
They have a cart that you put trays on, and it's very it's very nice. And so I was watching this kid who was playing on, like, you know, those metal dividers that keep you corralled in line so you know which way to go. He was, like, climbing over the fucking barriers and, like, hanging on to them. And I was like, someone needs to tell that kid not to do that shit. Right. Someone needs to tell that kid not to do that shit. And I turn around for a second. And next thing I hear is thunk. And I look, and he, like, landed square on his head. And I just guffawed, like, as loud as I possibly could. I laughed at this child's pain. And then after doing some, like, soul searching and understanding, that wasn't the best move.
Yeah, it's probably not. For a good responsible adult man to
laugh at kids hurting themselves.
It's good that you're not good or responsible, so.
True.
Boom.
I redeemed myself a little bit later on because
the joke was there, so I took a swing.
You tried.
I tried.
I missed it. It went over my head. You swung too hard. It wasn't a line drive. It was a floater, and I completely missed it.
I was gonna ask, what treats did you have?
Have any food? Yeah, I had Swedish meatballs, mashed potatoes, and just mixed vegetables. It was pretty good. It was weird because there were no forks, and so my dad and I ate the food with the spoons. It was weird. It was not an enjoyable experience. But then I redeemed myself from guffawing at an injured child, where another child knocked over a tray and smashed a plate. And I did not laugh. And I was looking over, and her mom was not paying attention to her. And I'm like, your kid just broke a plate. Like, I'm not saying yell at her. I'm saying look, just to make sure she's okay. And then this little kid picks up the broken pieces of plate. And I said, don't touch that, very loud, and she put it down, because she was going to cut herself, because she is a very small, maybe like 7 or 8 year old girl.
Did you get the mom's attention?
I did not.
What?
Her mom was paying attention. Mom was bad.
The girl paid attention, but not, well, wow.
Yeah. And so I'm like, man.
Kids, man.
So that's my IKEA holiday story.
That's kids. So we were going to talk about when you heard about when's the first time you heard there was no Santa Claus.
So
grew up with the Santa Claus. I'm not talking about Tim Allen. I'm talking about Santa Claus.
So
Santa Claus, mythos in America. Yes, we both grew up with that. So.
Yeah. So I didn't so much hear that there was no Santa. I kind of figured it out on my own because. So I was a very curious child. I was probably the kind of kid who would, like, hang around on the dividers in a line as at least until my mom would intervene.
Smack your head.
Yeah. And that's how you learn. You gotta learn by smacking your head a few times.
Turn into adults and then smack their head a couple times on the ground even more.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a manner of speaking.
Yeah, we're not advocating child abuse, but
right. I mean, it's Darwinism.
Yeah, exactly. And we're still here. That kid's got a long way to go before we find out if it's gonna survive. But anyway,
you gotta throw him into the ocean, like Sparta out there, kids.
What were we talking about? Is this the show?
Is this the show? I don't know. We're talking about Santa. So you kind of were inquisitive about there being no Santa.
Yes. So I would go around the house and I'd, like, go into places I probably shouldn't have been. And we had a crawl space, kind of like an attic on the top floor of our house, second floor of our house. And
the storage space of the Midwest.
Oh, yeah. And that's where my parents would always hide the gifts before they were wrapped. And so probably for about 5 years before my parents knew that I had stopped believing in Santa Claus, I was playing it off that I still did, because I found their hidey hole. And I was like, if I still show that I believe in Santa Claus, they won't suspect that I know where they hide the gifts every year, so I can get my sneak peek and find out what I'm getting. So, right. Yeah.
Mine was very nonchalant. It was just like, and I don't think I was upset, as more as I was like kind of depressed that my parents were lying to me. because I have older sisters, so they already like knew where the presents were.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, "Oh, Devin, you want to know a secret?" Like, yeah. And they go, "Look in there." And then so like just like sneaking around where we're not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, "Oh, those are Santa's presents." They're not Santa's presents, idiot. They're, you know, they were bought for us by our parents. "Oh, okay." And I didn't really think much about it. And then it was like a really clear memory I have of walking around in a Walmart and my mom saying that she needed to go pick up something. Mm-hmm. And I go, "You need to pick up our Christmas presents?" And she's like, "What?" And I go, "Yeah, no, I know there's no Santa. You don't have to."
"You don't have to keep this up, Mom.
You don't have to keep this up." It was basically me going, "You know, it's tiring for both of us. We can just let the lie lie." being an adult about it. Believing in Santa when I was young, I still get the like magic argument about it. I don't want to like make a little kid cry. There's kind of a point believing in magic when you're younger, because this world is a cold, cruel place, and you want a little warmth, you know?
Yeah.
You need something.
Nothing warms you up like lies.
Stories, man. Just as long as you believe their stories.
Yeah. And
just as long as you grow up to know better.
I remember, like, I'm thinking back on it now, and
Christmas better.
It was actually kind of remarkable, because, so, like, love my mom to death. She was great, like, one of the best people I ever knew. Right. And when she was talking, when she broke the news to me and Bridget, she was very adamant, because we grew up very Catholic, and she was very adamant that, so Santa Claus isn't real, but Saint Nicholas definitely is real. And then she tried to cling onto it like Saint Nicholas definitely brings you some of the presents each year.
Yeah, and Saint I'm like, Nicholas is actually the stand-in.
And I'm like, wait,
what?
What? So a dead saint comes into our house?
And yes, the spirit of Saint Nicholas just like comes in and brings you guys the presents.
And I was like,
Santa might not be real.
They all have barcodes, Mom. Do they have barcodes in heaven?
Yes.
And she was like, "Yeah." "How do you think God keeps track of everything?" And I was like, "Oh, okay." Fair enough. You'd think it was the omnipotence, but
I did watch Elf recently, and throughout the film, I'm just like, how do they kind of like justify this with like, because they are in a real life world where parents buy presents for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So like, do they not buy presents at all?
Right.
Maybe that's, but like, they have they have the knowledge that Christmas is the time of year to buy presents in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, isn't there just going to be double presents under the tree if Santa's bringing presents?
You have to imagine they delineate. So imagine in the ECU, the Elf cinematic universe.
Exactly.
The parents that go out and buy gifts, they're buying gifts for other adults who no longer have the gift of magic.
All right. So
but all
the
kids'
ECU,
gifts. Yeah, in the ECU. ECU.
I was thinking in the ECU, Santa kind of discriminates and makes sure that the poorer households actually get something. Santa's a socialist in my universe.
Santa is a socialist in the ECU.
So he wants to make sure all the, like, the orphans and stuff. That's why he took Buddy. He played it off like he was cool, that he didn't know anything about it. But he took Buddy because he knew he'd have a better life. And he does that every year. And he just has a bunch of humans just living. So we're going to have a bunch more sequels to Elf soon. We should. We're waiting on them to grow up in the North Pole. Yeah. Because Elf is a true story.
Absolutely. 100%.
Right. What else are we going to do? We're going to, like, I was going to have a whole thing about, oh, these are the books that I read and stuff like that. And really the only thing that matters to me on this list is music.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to shout out some music options out there for people who don't listen to a lot of new music and want to become acquainted with some of the stuff that came out this year. So do you know a band called Rainbow Kitten Surprise? I probably brought them up when I was talking about Forecastle Festival.
You mentioned them on the first episode of the podcast, I believe.
Yes. Very stupid name, but I mean, it's cute, right?
Yeah.
It's cute, right? So they came out with their second studio album called How to Friend Love and Freefall, and it is a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, like alternative rock meets like hip hop inspired, and like there's some country influences on there. Very, very good, and he raps too, and it's like it's basically diary entries, poetry, but he raps.
Okay.
And they're all about relationships, finding love, and like just falling into the, you know, like giving it up and, you know, being in the moment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Being
present.
Being present.
To keep it with the holiday theme.
Being presents. Yes. Yeah. Very good presents. They all talk about, they're all Christmas girls, and I would buy up an RKS Christmas Carol album. That'd be great. A good rap about St. Nicholas.
A rainbow kitten surprise under the tree.
Exactly. Next one is Mitski, Be the Cowboy. You know Mitski either? Do you know any of these guys except, I know you know Pusha T.
I've heard the name Mitski.
Mitski is brilliant. You would actually really like her. Really good, like it's like kind of like a disco kind of thing, but it's also folksy.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So like, and another, like I gravitate toward a lot of music is the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very wordy person. So Mitski has a lot of just like emotional lines about how, you know, like being, how to adapt to loneliness in a strange country, because she wrote this album while she, on purpose, she went to Singapore, and she doesn't speak the language in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And rented out this apartment and stayed there for 3 or 4 months writing songs.
Uh-huh.
And she just wanted to see what like a solitary would feel like in a, and that is like the most buck wild thing. I would never do that. That's so crazy. Just like being alone with your own thoughts and like writing an album.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Be the Cowboy, I think it's up for a Grammy this year. It's been on multiple top 10 lists. So that's good. And then I'll just button this up with some rap stuff. No Name. She used to be No Name Gypsy, but now, you know, Gypsy is problematic, so she dropped Gypsy. Mm-hmm. No Name came out with her second studio album, Room 25, which is very good. Just like another like rambling diary entry type thing,
where mm-hmm.
it's like just melodic R&B and inspirations, and just tears it up. Brockhampton is actually one of my top. My top artist for this year, according to Spotify. And I listened to a lot of Brockhampton, and they came out with Iridescence, which is very, very good, very grimy, dark, like synth-esque. I know you probably know nothing about Death Grips, but...
I do know Death Grips.
What?
Yep. Nice.
Death Grips and JPEG Mafia are like the two that I think of when I think of like dirty, grimy, like, I guess they're grime inspired. They're inspired by the grime fad in the UK.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, it's just like using just very unaesthetic tones and stuff in your music to kind of put the point that music doesn't have to be beautiful. It can be ugly and terrifying and weird.
Still amazing.
And then the last one is Pusha T, Daytona, which I think is probably the best mainstream rap project to come out this year. Very short. I think it was like 27 minutes or something like that. But he packs in a lot of stuff, a lot of just like flashy bars. But like Pusha T does what Pusha T does, which is make like triple entendres and just really catchy choruses. And I love that album. So yeah, so all of that was the music. And that's the only thing I'm going to talk about, because I, you know, if I went on for all of my 28 list, it would be the entirety of the podcast. So
yeah,
that's what I care about. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Do you want to talk about anything else in concerns to media or Spotify or?
Yeah. So I did my Spotify year in review. And I think I might have mentioned in the last episode that I didn't have Spotify for the whole year, but I was still pretty pleased with my results. It was my number one listened to genre was obviously punk. Top bands were, if memory serves, number one was the Menzingers, the Manchester Orchestra, the Front Bottoms.
It's good ones. Good
Frank
game.
Turner. And maybe Chris Titi, I'm not sure.
Can I tell you that I actually saw Frank Turner? I saw Frank Turner in 2010.
Oh, shit, dog.
Very early, I maybe knew one or two of his songs.
Hell yeah.
Very early for me. Frank Turner's been doing this forever.
Oh, yeah, he has. Yeah. Did you... It was a good show. Did I tell you about my Frank Turner experience?
No.
Oh, shit, dog. So, back in 2015... My buddy Kyle and I, we went to back-to-back concerts. The first one we went to was in Philadelphia. It was Frank Turner. He was headlined by Beans on Toast and the Menzingers, Skinny Lister. And so I loved the show so much the first time that I wanted to go again. That was also my first concert, was a Frank Turner concert. And so he was playing the next night up in Baltimore. So after Kyle and I got back from Philadelphia, we slept, woke up, drove to Baltimore for the show the next day. And I was wearing this white dress shirt, essentially. And
okay.
You could like very easily pick me out in the crowd because everyone was like wearing grungy like black shirts and band tees and all that shit. And I was the one guy. Dark. With like this bright white shirt on. That was very noticeable. And so I found my way up to the front right against the barricade. And it was, Frank was doing Four Simple Words. And so I was like right at the front, I was screaming every word along to him when he was singing, having just a fucking blast. And there's this one part in Four Simple Words where he says, "I want you and me both to join hands there at the front." And so I'm screaming it, I'm like throwing my hands out, I was like, "I want you and me both to join hands there at the front," and I throw my hand up and Frank grabs my hand and I was like over the moon. I'm looking at this dude's hand, I'm like, man, I need more tattoos. And so there comes a break in the lyrics, and it's just an instrumental. He looks down at me, he's like, "Are you ready?" And I wanted to say "for what?" But I said "yeah" instead. And he said, "You sure?"
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, "Hell yeah." And so he put as much tension on my arm as he could, vaulted over me, and started crowd surfing.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, that is like the top experience of my fucking life.
I've had actually two similar experiences. Well, one was just like that I was singing the songs along with the artist, because I saw Metric, and she was... So the end of the Metric set, I think it was LC, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, at Summerfest, CD1025 Summerfest, 101 probably back then. And the end of the set, which was outside, it was raining, but it wasn't like a huge downpour.
Yeah.
So Metric was like, let's end our set anyway. And so they did it, and they switched up the encore so that it was Give Me Sympathy, which is like a slow song, but like a good like hand, like wave side to side kind of song. Everybody feels like family. It's great. And so when she sings the words, I can feel it in my bones, I like shout it out, and like I point to my wrist, and she looks, I'm like, hell yeah. that and the other time is I saw Matt and Kim, also at BLC. I've seen them twice, and at that show, Kim did a thing. She apparently she does this bit. I don't know if she does it anymore since she broke her leg one time, but she does this bit where she dances on top of the crowd.
Oh hell yeah!
Yeah, and so she made her way to the crowd, and then she got to the place where she was standing, and I was there holding her up while she was dancing.
Hell yeah.
Which is real cool.
There was, so the bass player for Skinny Lister used to do, also, they're like, all of their songs are like sea shanties, so it's kind of weird, but also like a fucking great time. Lorna Thomas, who wound up signing that white shirt I was wearing to that concert. So she would get down, like, dance with people in the crowd, put your hand on my waist and blah, 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 and just, like, go nuts, and it was great.
Right.
But something else they used to do is they had a fucking flagon full of rum, and they used to just pass it around.
That's amazing.
And so everybody was, like, chugging on this fucking rum, and it was a great time. And
one of my first concert memories is being at Vans Warped Tour. R.I.P. Vans Warped Tour. I actually wrote down a bunch of concerts that I've attended just so I don't forget them anymore, and it took me like 2.5 hours, but I wrote them down, and I've apparently seen 100+ artists, so yay.
Hell
me.
Yeah.
But I was at Vans Warped Tour 2007 in Cleveland, and it was the first act of the day that we saw, which was Schwayze. I don't know if you know, if you remember Schwayze. They sing that Corona and Lime song.
Oh.
Once you made my Corona and Lime, you could be my main squeeze. Good song. Good band. I like their first album. But in the set, in the middle of the set, Schwayze, the rapper, asks anybody out there if they're smoking weed, and like, yeah, and so he's like, oh, well, give me some. And then the guy like start like passing up, like it starts passing up a baggie to the front. I was like, this is 2007, so what, I am 11 years old.
Hell
and
yeah.
This, and I'm like, holy shit, that's what's up. So yeah, fucking awesome, man.
Hell yeah. Oh shit, when I was thinking about the rum, I completely forgot the point of the story about the bassist for Skinny Lister.
Yep.
So I
also interrupted that.
Oh, you're good. So he used to crowd surf and with his bass and play bass, and it's a standing bass, not like a modern four-string like guitar style bass. So he's got this huge ass standing bass, crowd surfing, still playing it, and he came up like, and so I put my hands up to support him, and he kind of tips a little, just enough so I can see the very like the front of the bass,
right?
And he has one of those like massive fucking stickers, and it's like that really retro bubble writing from like 70s disco kind of era. Yeah. And it says, "This machine kills dubstep." And I was like, yeah, that's so great.
What was that?
Pardon?
What era? What year was that?
That was 2015.
Okay. All right. So still kind of after the big bubble, but yeah.
Yeah.
That dubstep bubble. Man, we got Skrillex out here making music for Kingdom Hearts, so.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, they just came out with that trailer today, which is fucking great, actually.
Buck wild.
I am kind of embarrassed that I just love that series so much, and I'm really waiting for that game. I think we talked about your artist.
Because you
talked about your concert going experiences, and then we went on a whole tangent.
Yeah.
That's what we did. remembering stuff is hard. So you want to include your top songs or your minutes listened or top
genre? Let's see here. I think my top, hang on, let me see if I can pull this up. What was my top song? I know one of my top songs was a bit on the older, not like old side, but it was "I Want to Get Better," the acoustic version. Right. And very, very good. I listened to that drunk and sad like a lot, like a real boy. But got it. All right, so yeah, top artist, top songs. Number one was actually "I Want to Get Better" because I listened to it so much drunk. Next one is "Far Drive" by the Front Bottoms off their new album, well, newish album, most recent album, "Going Gray." "Woman Reading" by La Dispute. "She's Been Drinking" by Will Varley, and "Everyone But You" also by the Front Bottoms.
Nice. My Front Bottoms are so good.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
Like, that's another thing is don't take this the wrong way, but the Front Bottoms write very cliche lyrics, but I think that's the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
They totally are just like in that. Emotionally vulnerable point, like part in like every song. So that's something I can appreciate.
Hell yeah.
My Spotify list was surprising because apparently my top genre is pop, but I don't remember listening to a lot of pop.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I listened to St. Vincent. She can be considered pop. Some Drake songs, some Kendrick Lamar songs can be considered pop. Some Brockhampton songs can be considered pop. So I don't know how Spotify lists stuff anymore. So if they do multiple genres, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And I feel like St. Vincent falls more along the lines of like alternative or indie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So my top artists are, it's a weird, strange, weird list because it's Brockhampton, which you just mentioned, Courtney Barnett, which she's amazing. I saw her for the first time live this year, alt rock. Kendrick Lamar, which is rap, obviously. Drake, which is rap, and then Kurt Vile, which is another alt rock, like folksy singer. So, yeah, and I listened to a lot of them getting ready for the Forecastle Festival, so that's why Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile are up here, probably, because I listen to a lot of those songs. Brockhampton's just up here because I listen to them, like, daily. But I don't know how that kind of translates to top genre being pop.
Yeah, weird.
But my top songs are rap, except one. My top song is apparently Photo Booth by Joey Perp, which is a weird song to be my top, but I guess I've listened to it way too much. It's on one of my later go-to playlists. So.
Oh, yeah.
Motivate by J. Cole, which I'm surprised J. Cole's not up here. But, I think his album is actually, controversial opinion, I think his most recent album is better than Kendrick Lamar's.
Oh, damn.
Yes, oh damn. Did you get that joke?
No.
Kendrick Moore's album is called Damn. So.
Oh, shit.
Then it's Boogie by Brockhampton, Nameless Faceless by Courtney Barnett, and King's Dead by Kendrick Lamar with Schoolboy Q and Future.
Hell yeah.
And that's actually a song that's in the Black Panther album, which is fucking weird. Now Marvel lets you do like explicit lyrics and stuff in the songs for comic albums.
Hell yeah.
It's fucking awesome too. So yeah, that's our year in music. I hope everybody enjoyed that segment of us rambling on about music we love.
Super good. 10 out of 10, would recommend. Do you remember what your first song that you played in the year was?
Oh, it was actually, hold on.
Because I remember exactly what mine was.
I know what it was, but I don't remember. It was Super Ink Burst by Igloo Ghost.
So mine was, because I was at a New Year's Eve party. And so when, not proud to admit it, but I may have blacked out. But apparently the first song I played, even though I was blacked out, was I opened Spotify at midnight and started blasting Auld Lang Syne.
Awesome. A good go-to, when I'm being a sad boy on New Year's, is to listen to the album Who the Fuck Are the Arctic Monkeys?
From
2006, because they have like No Buses and Despair in the Departure Lounge are both like sad, slow songs that are like, oh, well, I guess this is it. Like another rotation around the sun.
Shit, dog.
Existential crises happening
every day.
Every day, quarter life crisis. Let's do it.
Oh man, I'm almost there. Let's go.
Quarter life crisis challenge.
I mean, technically, as of listening to this, I am already there.
You're right. If we go by the standards of American life, yes.
And you know, because we are doing the weird thing where we're recording because the holidays are coming up. Obviously, that's why this is the non-denominational holiday special.
Non-denominational. TM. Wait.
We're recording two episodes in one day, so this is very Dark Souls, where the fabric of time is convoluted, and
right. Should actually do a marathon like this.
Do what?
Would you ever be down for that? A marathon like this? We do like five podcasts.
I would absolutely not be down for that. My brain is dead enough already.
We can do a stream or something.
I would be down with that.
That would, because you could eat and drink and play video games.
Hell yeah, do some Stardew Valley.
Smash, actually. Oh shit, Stardew Valley.
Hell yeah, because I can't stream Smash. I don't have the ability to. I don't think. Whatchamacallit? The Switch has the ability to stream natively. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you gotta rig up something.
And I'm not about to spend money on that.
Yeah, those boxes are like $1,300, something like that.
Yep, that's a no from me, dog.
Unless you're doing it professionally, it's not worth it.
Hell nah.
You want to do that last thing from Polygon that we?
Oh shit, dog! Yeah. It's gonna be super quick, which is a good way to end this show.
Yeah. So, Polygon. Who are revisiting our favorite series on Polygon, Unraveled, with Mr. Brian David Gilbert. And so after the last podcast now, I watched, I wasted three weeks of my life finding Castlevania's Hottest Monster, episode 4. And he just came out with one called Super Smash Brothers Owes Millions and OSHA. I spelled OSHA wrong. On here, but OSHA violations. So I was just watching that, while getting ready for the podcast. But he has a thing in here, which he rigged up called "Which Castlevania title are you?" and it's basically a play that like all Castlevania titles sound the same. So he has a January through December list of what's going in the first one, and then of, and then he has your birth date is your second one, and that's 1 to 31, and yeah. So, what Castlevania title are you, Dylan? And what kind of game would that be?
I am Castlevania Jazz Solo of Blood. Okay. And you would play Kenny G, except Kenny G's name spelled backwards, which I'm too lazy to think of what it is right now.
Enoch G, but backwards.
Enoch G, but the G looks like a weird diphthong, because it's got to be backwards text. And you would your primary weapon would be. What the fuck does he play? A clarinet? A lute?
He plays the saxophone.
The saxophone. So your primary... Saxophone.
What? Sorry.
Yeah, your primary weapon would be the saxophone, and you would go around, and you would destroy the beasts through seduction with your sweet, sweet songs.
And you would just get the... you get the licensing rights to one song, Stealing Dan's Deacon Blue, because he says, I want to play the saxophone. And so you're just going to get that part, and then that's just going to be looped over and over again while you're jumping through levels.
Absolutely.
mine is a weird one. Mine would be Castlevania Impression of a Foggy Night. So I think this title is just someone like gaslighting you for the whole video game.
Oh, absolutely.
So, like, you think that you are basically in Silent Hill kind of area where like monsters are coming up behind a bush or something, but then it flashes and like you're just like in the mental hospital and like people are trying to give you medicine.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of the latest Call of Cthulhu game.
Boom. Got
like,
him.
Nothing's happening. It's all in your head. It's
just like, an impression of a foggy night.
I'm pretty sure I fucking saw Dracula throw some wine and said, what is a man? but a miserable pile of secrets. And then I woke up here. And yeah.
Oh, man. You could actually do now that I think of it, you could do a pretty interesting game of, like, is this real? Is this not real? With a horror.
Hell yeah.
Man. I wish I was a... No, I don't. I was going to say, I wish I was a game developer. But I don't.
Absolutely not. It's too much time.
A game I want to make. So is very, very loud right now. But that is fine, because we are buttoning up.
Yeah, we are. Where can we...
A lot of fun, is what I was going to say.
Very big fun.
Very big fun.
Maximum fun.
Max fun. Max Temkin fun. all right. So that was another great episode of Every Other Wednesday.
Hell yeah.
Where can peoples find you on the internet, Dylan?
Well, the peoples, they can dunk on me on Twitter, at Dylan Bickers. They can also check out my blogs, which I may or may not have added additional entries to since the last episode because time is convoluted and Solaire of Astoria is telling me this at dylanbickers.com, and you can find more information about our lovely podcast that you're listening to right now at EOW, that's E as in every, O as in other, W as in the misspelling of Joaquin, .fireside.fm.
Amazing. You can find me, Devin Everettenham, at Devin Nava on Twitter. I changed my name to Devin Christmas Name Everettenham. So that's pretty cool. I'm a cool cat like that.
Hell yeah.
You can also find all of my bloggity stuff at devinnava.com. I just renewed that license. So,
woo!
One more year. Yeah. And you can find, we are... intro and outro music is provided via Villainous Beats. You can find him on SoundCloud. He's coming out with another project New Year's Eve night. So I am awaiting that. Do we have a final? I chose final last time. So
shit, dog. Let me get on this.
You should do a final, and I will vamp for you.
All right.
You know, I have very, very good tweets, but I'm sure Dylan has very, very good tweets, or whatever he's about to do.
I was about to do a final Yahoo, because I'm...
Because you are a stealing jokes boy. That's what this podcast is built on now.
So. Oh, shit, dog. None of these are good.
None of them are good. But I have to vamp anyway, so I'm singing about how none of them...
All right. Digga digga digga. Final. We have in the politics section... Yahoo Answers user Anonymous, we will call him Tillerson, asks, would you climb Mount Everest alone in the middle of winter to save Trump's life for $1 million? Best answer, I wouldn't climb Mount Everest for anything.
That's good. All right. See you, Dylan.
Bye.